As I made my mistakes there in the chanting, I noticed embarrassment arising and ceasing. Simple. And then I thought, do the devas come when you make a mistake? I reckon they do. So it's an interesting process, isn't it? It was just basic. What do? You, if you ever want to teach a retreat, here's the formula. First of all, noble silence. So you got the power. And then take away all the distractions. Then set up a schedule and then say, watch your mind. Really what it is, isn't it? A few encouragements and a few jokes and keep it going. It's extraordinary what you learn, isn't it? And you just take away all distractions and just keep encouraging, okay, how is it now? And wisdom arises. Painful needs arise, difficulties arise, but through all that wisdom arises. Purification, that happens a lot, doesn't it? All kinds of material comes up, which sometimes is surprising, sometimes is expected. But witnessing to it, one feels, yeah, that was difficult, but necessary. Amazing, isn't it? Interesting. And then if you look at what conventional culture is doing, it's just keeping everyone distracted. It's just exact opposite. Certainly a certain amount of distraction is just a part of the earning a living and so on. I don't have that problem. You've probably heard the story of my father. Apparently when I was about 6 years old, I don't know what age as a kid, probably a bit older, 10 years old, I said at dinner table, I'm not gonna work 9 to 5. So apparently I'd been a monk for about 5-6 years and my parents finally took it seriously. And my dad apparently said to my mother, he's done it. So our culture is seems to be moving to more and more distraction. Ajahn Kusala reckons we'll have kind of iPod implants in our brains in a few years. You won't even have to carry a little machine around. It could be. You know, it's so wacky. So the people getting around with their little earpieces and the mind's always out. And we're coming home. You know, that's really what I hope we're doing, coming home. And then within that, when one encounters difficult material and the challenges of just staying with it, but it has, these retreats have a profound impact, don't they? A profound impact. So if you just kind of remember that, what the importance of non-distraction, of stopping, of witnessing, of allowing. Difficulty is when life comes at us fast and furious, and we have to deal with it. We can't just kind of go to our zafu. Then we pick up a lot of negative things. We pick up stress, we pick up tension, we pick up resentments, we pick up disappointments, and we don't have a chance to process them in the ordinariness of a day at work. So what's going to happen to that if I don't stop and allow it to unfold? What's going to happen? It's going to kind of lodge in the system, and then stopping becomes more difficult, right? And then more things lodge in my system, stopping becomes more difficult, then I need to veg out a bit. And so then the distractions become more meaningless, but necessary. And then I have to do another 10-day retreat. So 10-day retreats are great, but you know, how are we gonna, what have we learned? And you don't have to kind of put up your hand and tell me, because I've learned what you've learned through the sharings. But how can I, what do I want to take away from here? Well, I can't take an experience. I am taking away what we call virtuous qualities. You know, we've all built up good qualities of mind. But where would I like to be next retreat, besides Galilee? Where would I like to be in my own heart and mind? Or what is important in all of this? What is significant in all of this? What is meaningful in all of this? And what part of that fits my aspiration? Yeah, and what would I like to do with that aspiration in the coming year when I, you know, next retreat? I hope you all come back next year. We'll probably do it again. Who knows? But this is the whole sort of sense of discernment that we can have around our life, our spiritual life. And it's okay to have goals. On a retreat, what I'm always trying to emphasize is just how do you be with life as it is, right? Rather than try to gain something. And I think if we understand that, then goals are possible, goals are necessary. I think you need to really have a sense of where you're going in the path, but they're not from becoming. They're from creating the right causes for the realization of peace. It's different. Like, let's say, if I tend to have a lot of, say I'm a very jealous person, and I just get jealous about this and jealous about that, and I just feel very defensive or whatever, and I wake up to that, and if I say to myself, in 12 months' time, I'm not going to be jealous, and then each time jealousy comes up, I suppress it, I shouldn't be jealous, I'm not going to be jealous, that's not Dhamma. That's trying to become someone who is not jealous by repressing jealousy. That doesn't work. I think we've all tried that, right? So repression doesn't work. And that's what I mean by becoming. You have an aspiration to become a better person, but you take it kind of egotistically, and then when its opposite comes up, the opposite of your ideal, your expectation, your hope, you suppress that, and then feel guilty when it comes up. That's all wrong view practice. Right view practice is, okay, there is suffering. It's not that I have a jealousy problem. There, jealousy is something that overwhelms awareness. There's a just different take on it. Still dealing with the situation. So if I would like to have the mind not get hoodwinked by jealousy, if I would like to sustain awareness, what would be the causes for strengthening an awareness around that particular condition? What would be the causes for that condition when it arises not to be, not to fool me, not to kidnap me? What would I need to do to see it cease in the mind? What are its energies? That's discernment. The other is simply an idealism which then leads to terrible disappointments and so on and so forth. And then one gives up the path, really. But discernment is like really seeing, well, okay, this is a condition of suffering. This arises when life is the way it is. And then what do I need to do in the present moment? So it's always present moment practice, but there are results. There are still results. It doesn't mean there aren't results. And that's a different approach. So what is it that you would like to work on in this coming year? Where would you, how do you, like in 10 years' time, where would you like to be in your spiritual practice? Is that reasonable? I'd like to be enlightened. Well, I'd like to be free from, I'd like to understand more. What is it? What's reasonable? This is discernment. So when you set a goal, you take what we call adhitanas or determinations, one needs to use wisdom, one needs to use discernment. But it's very important to make intentions in the spiritual life, because that is what gives you the motivation and the direction in your spiritual life. So if I see that my sitting practice, like sitting practice is a very, for most people it's hard, for most lay folk it's very hard discipline to maintain. And yet, in 24 hours, an hour of sitting, it's not such a big deal. And yet people find it very difficult. Okay, so given that, Is there value in sitting? You know, have you found value in it? I'm not saying you found it easy, but is there value in that? What is the value of that? So one kind of really makes conscious what is valuable, what isn't valuable. So if you find sitting practice valuable, so what would be a reasonable amount of sitting practice I could do? What's reasonable in my life? It has to be reasonable. And so you set some kind of target. And how would I go about doing that? How in my life would I go about creating the causes where I do stop, where I do sit? And that's all about discernment. Or working on whatever habits, mental habits I have. So you have to have right understanding around cause and effect to work on your mind. You have to have some sense of what you like, what my lifestyle is, what kind of disciplines I can bring in. And then begin to really aim one's life, make it an important thing, because it is important, isn't it? The distractions. Somehow the world survived without us. It's kind of still going on out there. It isn't. And their emails will be there and all the rest of it. So consider now, this is a result of a 9-day retreat. If it's a terrible result and it's not worthwhile, then great, okay, that's fine. You have to kind of persuade you into it. But if there is something meaningful in this, why? Why is it meaningful? What is it about this kind of a situation? I can't live like this all the time. And how could I develop that in my life? So discernment and consideration is part of right thinking, which comes from a right understanding. I kind of understand what I might want to work on. If you, in terms of working on certain aspects of your karma, as it were, you don't have to have a finished product, but you can say, well, I really like to work in that area, so I have a really kind of tendency to be very cynical and critical all the time. I really like to work with that, because that really actually makes my life a very sour experience. It really robs me of joy. I see that. Now that's different than saying I'm a terrible person for being cynical. That's not wisdom. That's what we call self-view and self-disparagement and all of that. But there is this tendency towards whatever. And then, okay, what's the way out? How do you get out of that? Well, I have to awaken to it. I have to witness to it. Non-attachment. I have to see it cease. I have to put other things into my mind. So that's the wisdom faculty, discernment. And to make a good vow, to make a good determination, it has to be done with intelligence, not just some kind of inspired, oh, I'm going to sit for 4 hours a day and then that lasts 3 days max. Yeah, that's kind of childish, isn't it? But with sobriety and what's reasonable in my life, then what's also needed in a good determination is truthfulness. You have to honor your truth. Like if that's something that's important to me, and like if I've had some sense of what the spiritual life is about, if it's some sense of insight or peace or whatever, and it has affected me, then and I really yearn for that, then I have to honor that yearning, or I'm going to not really like myself, and I won't be trustworthy to myself. I guess that's the way you could put it. If I can't trust myself, who can I trust? Ask someone else to be trustworthy. If I can't trust myself, who can I trust? So that's called satya, or truthfulness, being really honest about the spiritual life. And then if I don't fulfill that, to be careful of rationalization. You say, well, that was a dumb decision anyway, right? And I need to distract my life more, whatever I need to do. And I think it's very important to honor your sense of the spiritual vocation, isn't it? Doesn't it seem very important? Because after a while, then life can just kind of become a distraction, and one feels kind of yuck. I'm not really taking advantage of this human birth. I'm not really cultivating what I want to cultivate. And this is how the Buddha talked about, or in the text, it's talked about making determinations or vows that you have discernment, kind of a sense of what your karma is. Like during these interviews, people are so terribly, they're so honest and diligent. I'm always very impressed. And of course, I look at it not so much from what the particular experience is. I look at what's the process for this person? What's the context of them coming into the retreat? And how are they working with that context? So I'm not worried about the particular experiences a person has, whether they got angry or they got good samadhi. I'm saying, well, that's not so important, because each of us gets a different, we're dealt a different hand, aren't we? That, you know, so it's really how I'm working with what has come up. And so I'm always very impressed. Really staying with it and bearing with a lot of discomfort and all of that and difficult mind states. And that's a kind of process that's different than the particular experience one is having, right? The experience it'll be restless or it'll be unpeaceful or it'll be very serene or whatever it is, but what's the longer range within that? What's the longer view of that rather than just the particular experience? And that's what discernment does. It doesn't sort of get caught up with a particular difficulty of the moment or whatever. It says, okay, what's the long-term view? How do I work with this? And that's very healthy. So rather than expecting my mind to be peaceful all the time, okay, I'm going to keep working with that. So discernment, truthfulness, huh? Then relinquishment is an important part of developing the spiritual life, because you got to give something up. You know, there's got to be a trade-off. And you know, to sit on the cushion, you have to give up distracting on the internet, maybe. You know, maybe, you know, surfing the internet for a new zafu might be more fun. But doing the work on the cushion might be more fruitful. So the what do they say in the text? They say, if there are two pleasures in life, or two good things in life, one lesser and one greater, would you not give up the lesser pleasure for the sake of the greater? So that's what we've done here. Hopefully it's been fruitful. But you've given up a lot of comfort, haven't you? Given up a lot of desire to distract. Given up a lot of the comfort zones that we're usually in. We've given up that, not for the sake of self-mortification, in some kind of rigid religious discipline, you know, that kind of awful stuff that sometimes. But we've given up something for the sake of happiness, actually. For the sake of peace, for the sake of insight, for the sake of compassion. So there has to be a kind of vigor in this. There has to be, it can't just be, it's not easy. I guess that's what I'm saying, I'm trying to say. It's not necessarily easy. But isn't that good? I mean, I like the challenge myself. Isn't it like, why should it always be easy? Why should meditation be like surfing on the web for a zafu? Isn't something tough what brings out something very good in us? We live in such a comfort society, don't we? Like, we live within a range of what, 2 degrees, and we do the thermometer? Go, 71. It's a bit hot. I mean, we really develop comfort zones. But isn't, you know, when we are challenged in ways that we can learn from the challenge, I'm not advocating self-mortification, but isn't that good for us? And it is, isn't it? So giving up a lesser thing for a higher goodness, and that's one of the ways you look at renunciation. So relinquishment or renunciation is part of developing a good vow or a good determination. In terms of, for me, I think the real crux of renunciation or giving up or relinquishment is is a very simple understanding that in anything that changes, you won't find spiritual fulfillment in the body, in emotions, in relationships, in ideas, in feelings. All of that is just so contingent on everything else, that if I am seeking spiritual fulfillment in that, I'm looking in the wrong place. And so all the teachings around the five khandhas, or mind-body experience, sense experience, are always pointing to the fragility, the contingency, the impermanence, the unsatisfactoriness of all that movement that we experience. So we say, happiness is not the goal. And then you think, oh God, it means I have to be unhappy. But unhappiness isn't the goal either. But happiness is something that comes and goes. So sense happiness. But what's peace? Or it's not unhappy, it's deeply fulfilling, but it's something which isn't, it's not part of that good-bad duality. It's something deeper, it's the spiritual. And I think that insight, that, like, if you're sitting and you're trying to get somewhere, well, it can't be, because anything I get, it's gonna go. It can't be that. And that whole thing of trying to get somewhere, you give up, well, it's just this. Huh. And you come home again. That's what I've been trying to emphasize, you come home again. That's what renunciation really is about. That no sight, no sound, no taste, no bodily experience, no mental experience, no smell, can really fulfill you. You can enjoy it, so gratitude. So if the cards all come right and you're happy, go for it. But to spend your life trying to be happy is just to spend your life in comfort zones, isn't it? So here we you know, the point of this retreat wasn't to make you happy, was it? You know, if I would have been trying to do that, I'd have a nervous breakdown. You know, what can I do to make everyone happy? And so the desire mind, the negative desire, because desire can be a good thing, aspiration, is always going out. It's always going out, looking, trying to get rid of, confused, da-da-da-da. And then you come home, you say, oh, this is that restlessness. It's that which is renunciation. Coming home is renunciation. It's not rejection. So then happiness has a kind of, then you see the point. The whole point of happiness is to uplift the mind, to give the mind a rest. And so there's lots of happiness in the spiritual life. There's beauty, there's aesthetic beauty. That's all fine, but that's not the goal. That's not the goal. Like, sometimes I think in Western culture, the idea of spirituality is that you're so present to the lasagna that you're one with the lasagna. There's this kind of deeply, deeply sensed feeling of exotic taste. I mean, it's not that. That's the misunderstanding of one aspect of our culture. So then people take spirituality as like, try to squeeze everything out. It's like an acid trip. That's what you used to do, didn't you? Sorry. You just tried to create all the conditions to have the right trip. Right? So you could do that with a retreat. Kind of get everything right. I should have had a jacuzzi. So you have some kind of spiritual experience. Rubbish. It's not. All experience is contingent. The knowing, the awareness is not. It's not the same thing, is it? It's the knowing of experience, knowing of change. So then you can really appreciate beauty, but it's not to just create a sort of spiritually aesthetic life of beautiful Buddhas and meditation music, and, you know, that's fine. But that's the kind of, what is it they call it, the commodification of spirituality, where it just becomes a kind of another neat commodity that's sold in neat Buddhist books. That's all fine, people are making a livelihood, that's okay. But what is it about, you know, having the mindfulness to sit through an hour of restlessness? What's that about? And why can that give a good result? Because it's not, because what you're doing is now you're renouncing the need to keep changing everything in the sense of experience, and you're just abiding in the knowing. The restlessness ceases, and you say, oh yeah, that knowing is that's where the peace lies. That's renunciation, that insight. And so all those teachings about impermanence and unsatisfactoriness, they're referring to that, where not to go. Where not to go. But not to reject. It's not to reject it. Not to say you have to, you now have to live on a diet of salt and bread for the next year. Right? But see the limit, you know, just see the limit of that. See the limit of the sense world. Certainly, as my mother ages, the sense realm is not terribly satisfactory. Taste buds don't work. Eyes don't work. Balance doesn't work. Hearing's pretty good. Mind is great, fortunately. But you know, it's like there isn't much joy in the sense realm. There isn't much that can be. The heart experiences a lot of love and so on. But we don't have to be dependent on it. We can enjoy it while it's there, but we don't have to be dependent on it. So that's the whole idea of relinquishment. If there is a higher joy I can experience by giving up a lesser, surely I give up the lesser, wouldn't that? Wouldn't that be the thing to do? And then the fourth aspect of a determination or a vow is peace. First of all, that you do it peacefully. And if one has a sense, okay, I'm just gonna work on this lifetime. That's a good kind of perspective, isn't it? Rather than, oh no, there I go, I'm angry again. Or there I go, I'm being critical again. No, I'm going to work on this for a lifetime. Then, if I get angry, okay, that's what I'm working on. Yeah? So you put it into a perspective where you can keep at it. You can keep chipping away at it. The Iceman, you're chipping away at it. So that's peaceful. You know, it's combined with the discernment, but it has a sense of, okay, I'm going to work with that. Rather than the self-disparagement, oh, I've lost it, and so on. Just, no, I've got to work with this, I'm going to work with this. And that's still in the moment. And then is the result peaceful? You know, you have to, if the result isn't peaceful, then, okay, design flaw, I've got to get there's something wrong with my determination that is not in line with peace. This is all kind of very sober. It's not just from a, I think it's like mature spirituality rather than just kind of getting inspired and getting interested in Buddhism, the flavor of the month kind of thing, right? It's got a gravitas to it that one is willing to work on. A retreat does, the thing about the sitting practice, say, is that most of us have cleaned out a bit of restless and so on, and we've got some sense of centeredness and understanding. So you've got a momentum, don't you? You've got a momentum in discipline, in being able to center yourself. Now, it would be nice to try to sustain some of that, because as I say, if one doesn't have a regular practice of stopping, then leave it alone for a month, it's really hard to sit. You just can't, because it's so boring, and you go through the first 4 days of the retreat again. Right? So how do I sustain that brightness of mind? Sense experience, a lot of sense contact, dulls the mind. It really just dulls the mind. And then sitting again, you have to somehow, you have to bring up the energy, you have to do all of that. So kind of keeping the momentum is very important. So, I mean, I find sitting practice just fascinating. It's just this endlessly interesting little laboratory that I'm involved in. Right? But I don't have to do much grunt work. I'm lucky that way. But I notice that I rarely don't sit twice a day. Very rare. So, but if for some reason I haven't been traveling much, I've been traveling in airports and all of that, and then it's hard to sit. actually good, even though I've been doing it for so long. So, but it seems to me that the sitting practice is not the be-all and end-all of life, but it gives you a perspective on consciousness which is unique, because you're not distracting, you're not doing anything. I guess I'm just selling meditation here, aren't I? Rather than meditation cushions. But for me, it's important. For me, it's important. So I kind of encourage it. As for techniques and all of that, that's really up to you to develop. If you have one grounding technique which you can turn to, that's very valuable. So there is value in not being rigid, but sticking with one thing and learning how to do it. So I find, say, that deep breathing, and if you find that helpful, any kind of deep breathing, if you think about it, when you sit down first, what do you want to do? Quite often you want to do something rather coarse just to get yourself into the ballpark, get yourself here, as it were. So sometimes that's why I think I was doing that deep breathing, just to get you into the body. Right? Where, or if you're too subtle, if you just try to begin with the breath at the nose, sometimes the conditions of thought are just so powerful you get taken away by it. So something really, really obvious is sometimes very helpful. Even just standing there. You know, you're standing there for 10 minutes to get yourself in the moment. So counting the breath, doing deep breathing, very deliberate things. They're good. They're good to do. Sometimes just... like monks, I'll just do a lot of bowing. I just begin by like bowing 20 times, just bowing mindfully 20 times, or just doing something like Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vicca, just doing one chant over and over and over again, maybe 10, 20 times, just to get here. There's something very, very obvious that can be quite helpful. Like in terms of walking meditation, just like if you've really gotten hammered at work and everyone's been at you and your mind is all over the place, then the sitting is just too difficult sometimes, then just do walking. And walk vigorously. Just walk, 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 walk. But that's very, very good. Don't feel you always have to sit, because sometimes sitting is, your mind has just got too much energy. Walking's great. Just get a space in your room. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, work it off. But at least you're present, right? You're not just taking that and getting distracted and so on. You're processing it. So walking is a lovely thing to kind of get an appreciation for. A very good time to sit is when you don't want to sit. A very good time to sit is when something really strong is coming up, either to sit or walk, to give it the space to become conscious. Because when something comes up into consciousness, it needs to unfold. It needs to be known. They don't have to pull things up. They come up, I think, on their own, don't they? but just to see, okay, to stop. What is this like? So I often wonder, I think most people spend so much time in front of a computer. How can you use those hours to be honorable to your employer, you know, but to just like every now and then just somehow close your eyes and just stop. This is the way it is now. Stopping, 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 stopping. And then this is where you just have to design your lifestyle around that. If you have a chance to do days of mindfulness with a group, to sit with a group, to do retreats, weekend retreats, those are very good. Developing yoga, tai chi, bodily things. I don't teach yoga, I try to do a little bit. That's very, very good, because you're really in the body, you really stop. So there's many things you can do. But also, you get, like, meditation can also be, oh, I have to meditate, right? There's the laundry, all my emails to answer, then I'll meditate, and so it just becomes another thing I have to do. So then you just do it out of a sense of duty. So a love of the work is good, and the kind of challenge of doing it and the discipline of it. lay life has so many interesting things to do, so many good things you can do. And then you compare that to sitting. So it's not like people are living immoral lives or anything. You know, people are living very good lives. There's so many neat things to do. So it depends. You have to kind of see what. How can I? Is this important? What kind of priority do I want to put on it? If you develop a consistent sitting practice, it really does build. You know, over the years, you have this kind of lovely skill, like playing the piano, I suppose, or carpentry, and you have a kind of facility of understanding your mind, understanding how it works. So I'm an encourager. You know, I see people kind of like just keep going. I haven't had any freebies myself. You know, I haven't found spiritual life easy. I've just kind of I don't get blissed out. You know, I see people getting blissed out in retreat. I think, oh, that's nice. I'm an ice chipper. I just kind of grunt away. I used to feel intimidated by people getting blissed out. But I thought, good on you. You know, this is not that I'm pretty happy. It's quite solid. So I feel kind of solid in my practice, but no freebie, no free ride in this. So you have to develop confidence around your life and your mind and your own insights. Because like I find, I just tend to trust people myself. I kind of ask, okay, what have you learned? You got a good brain. You seem to be reflecting. I said, just trust in your insights. Keep trusting in that. I rarely tell people what to do. You know, thou shalt do this and that. Every now and then, some person I think just needs a bit of a spanking, but rarely. Not good at that. So some people like kind of more direction, but you know, to come to a sense of. Okay, this is the karma of this mind, and it works that way, and this is what the texts say, but okay, I'll try this. Oh, that gives a good result, that doesn't give a good result. That's where you really get the confidence, you know, it's really, really where you know for yourself. But you have to try, you know, you have to kind of like stick with it, keep trying. Tomorrow we will finish the retreat. And as you probably know the pattern, we we have the usual sitting at 6, and then at 9 we'll come together, or you can have breakfast. At 9 we'll come together. You hear that one? Ajahn Sumedho once did a retreat, and one of the junior monks persuaded him to put a sign on to close the kitchen, the dining hall door, and put a sign on, no breakfast today. People just stood in front of the sign reading it. He only did it once. Dangerous thing to do. People just stood there reading the sign. Anyway, so tomorrow at 9 we'll have a kind of closing talk, and whoever wants, they can take the 5 precepts, and then we'll have a sharing. It'll be finished by about 11. Okay, I'll leave that for tonight. Annamayanga varadamagataya sadhukarandramase sadhu sadhu sadhu. Sharing of blessings.